I'm not sure how it is coming from the south, but I know if you came from the north today, which is not my usual way in, I was in Farmington, you've come through the snow. And we appreciate you making your effort, and we want to certainly take the time we need for this meeting, but we'd like to move it along in a way for those of you who have a longer way to go, that we can get you back home in a timely manner and before hopefully huge traffic starts in that regard. We would like to recognize Mayor Dirk Timothy with us today. This is his first Transcom meeting he's been to. He's an alternate out of the Salt Lake County COG, and he's representing Mayor Cullimore from Cottonwood Heights, who could not be with us today in that regard. And do we have anyone else here for the first time? Okay. Oh, pardon me. We welcome you here as well.
Appreciate you.
Your attendance and having you with us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you very much. We would like to start by just going around the room and having you introduce yourself. So can we just start here on this side? And let's start back with Ted and then come up to the table. Yeah. And just come up this way and around.
Ted Knowlton, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff. Scott Hess, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
Ben Woodswitch, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
G.J. Labonte with the Utah Transit Authority.
Bob McKinley, I'm a co-chair of the UTA board.
Toby Molesky, Pleasant View City Mayor.
Michelle Bjorklund, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City.
Carmen Freeman, Harriman City.
Dirk Timothy, Bluffdale City.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Bill Applegar, Riverdale City.
Wayne Bennett, Regional Council staff.
Jeremy McFarlane, Sunset City Mayor.
Tammy Long, South River City Mayor.
Aaron Mendenhall, Air Quality Board.
And we're coming from Utah.
Sherry Marshall, Utah.
Ben Bolte with Green Bike.
Jennifer McGrath, UTA. Uriel Sochmel, WFRC staff.
Sam Lim with the County Council, Salt Lake County Council of Governments, Conference of Mayors, and WFRC staff.
Ned Hacker with the Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Nathan Mayne with Utah.
And Nathan has a new position. Nathan is the new Program Development Director for UDOT. We hate to lose him in Region 2, but now he can use his wisdom throughout the whole state, so we're grateful for that. Congratulations.
And Scott. Oh,
Scott.
And
I'm Scott Testman with Council staff.
We're happy to have him here today too. Scott will be running everything on that appears on the wall. He's the magic wall guy. So it's going to happen.
The magic wall.
Thanks to him. We would like to do the first item, and that is the minutes. If there's no changes in the minutes, we would be looking for a motion on the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
I'm second.
Hey, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So the ayes have it. We now open the meeting to public comment. Anybody who would like to make a public comment to the Transcom, we invite you to do that at this time. Seeing none, we'll shut the public comment time down. We'll now go to Wayne, who will make a presentation concerning the schedule for 2016 for Transcom.
All right, so as you're aware, there are two policy advisory committees to the Regional Council. One is the Regional Growth Committee, which covers long-range transportation issues. The other is this body, or Transcom, which covers short-range planning and programming issues. A memorandum of agreement established between WFRC, UDOT, and UTA established these two policy advisory committees to the Regional Council a long time ago, and that agreement has been updated periodically. As you'll see from the schedule, we've got...
Wait, could I just stop you just a minute right here? As this schedule's up, and he's going through this and looking at this, you might be thinking of what you want to talk about. This is your meeting. This is a suggestion from staff, and we appreciate that. They've gone through a great deal of work on it. But if there's things that you want to have emphasized from what they have up there or new items to put on, let's just speak right up as we go through the schedule, and we'll get it copied down and move in that direction as well. So please.
Thank you, Mayor. That's exactly right. The more input, the better. So you'll see today's outline, and okay. April's meeting, we'll get to this body, we'll get to recommend to the regional council which projects, and you'll get a recommendation from technical advisory committees to Transcom. April's focus will be recommending new projects to add to the surface transportation program, the congestion mitigation air quality program, and the transportation alternatives program, the three of the main programs that WFRC administers, in addition to the transportation land use connection program, community development block grant program, and the economic development administration funding that the council is able to help applicants with. June's meeting, the main item will be releasing the new TIP, the six-year funding program for highway transit, active transportation, other surface transportation modes for public review. August, we'll get to come back and recommend adoption and hear any of the comments that were received during the public comment period. And then November, we'll start again on, such as with letters of intent for the WFRC programs, we'll start again on the next cycle of funding programming. So you can see heavy emphasis for Transcom on programming, but scattered throughout here, and in addition to from the group, if there are other items that you'd like to see discussed, here's a starting list to that, but if there are other items, we'd love to hear about things you'd like to see Transcom talk about.
Other items that you would like to have discussed?
Well, are we still going to talk about the bike lanes sometime during not here?
Thank you. So today we've got a report on bike share, one aspect of active transportation. On the June agenda, that fourth item down, we intend to have some more discussion on active transportation. And then as well in April, the whole focus of the Transportation Alternatives Program is bicycle and pedestrian projects. And you'll see in part of Ben's presentation today that bike lanes get discussed in other projects in the other programs as well. So.
Any other comments?
I have one, Mayor.
Here?
I mean, how might, if you go forward, I think it's in June when we have the air quality report, or maybe the following months.
I don't know if we put that under a specific month.
Right, I just wonder how that might inform our CMAQ discussion. And if the timing of the availability of that report is such that we could utilize it, you know, before we have CMAQ.
Thank you. That's a great suggestion. Air quality is the primary, air quality benefit cost ratio is the primary criterion for recommending CMAQ projects. And we'll make a note of that. And if there's any new information that might be pertinent from a regional perspective for air quality, we'll make sure Kip is here to talk about that. Thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Any other suggestions? You know, I would suggest, Wayne, if sometimes I make this suggestion like this, and it takes people hours to do it. So if I'm just way off base here, just say, hey, crawl back down there, buddy. But it might be, because we don't have everybody here, and even those of us are here, it might help if you send, if you have somebody send an email out with this schedule and with the invitation to think about it and send any other topics back.
That's like great.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, I have been hired by Andrew to advertise, and I am getting $50,000 for this ad, so I hope you will take it serious. We are very serious about
Hey, crawl back in your hole, buddy.
That's right. All know what this is.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. Let me tell you, we know where you live, Mayor. So right here, if we have copies for here, if they haven't had a hard copy, it's online at the website, and so we would encourage, not only Mario has some right there if you want to raise your hand.
I'd like to be recruited for that job next.
Wow, if you don't have one, we're calling on somebody. I think his name was Carlos.
Exactly.
So, at any rate,
this doctor has gone viral. It's even gone across the pond into Europe.
Really?
It has.
To Europe. You're serious.
I'm dead serious.
So he's the guy you got to hire for your advertising.
Sure. I was in a meeting a month ago, and somebody held one of these up and said, I was in a meeting in Switzerland, and a lady stood up and there and said, she had one of these. She said, I want you to know that you taught me these swings.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So put that in your history. That is neat. Thank you very much. Appreciate you sharing that, Dan. Thanks so much. Okay, now we'll go to item number 4, and we'll turn the time to Ben. This is concerning the TIP program. This is a non-action item. It's an information item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your packet, you'll have a copy of a signed resolution of action that was taken by the Regional Council in our January meeting. On the board modification number 3, there were two lists of projects. The first was a project on I-215. This would be the improvements on the westbound, and essentially will tie in, will become part of the I-215 project that will go all the way to SR-201. The request was for additional funds. Those additional funds were made available by the eastbound cost savings project there on I-215 from Redwood Road to 3rd East. The next table that's also included with that resolution is a copy of the TIF program for the Transportation Investment Fund program. And the projects that are included in the Wasatch Front area that were approved by the Transportation Commission to be a part of the TIF program, taking the TIF program out to the year 2022. Were highlighted in blue. There were 5 new projects in the Wasatch Front area, and those were also amended into the existing Transportation Improvement Program. Are there any questions on either one of those?
Ben?
Yes.
Just some clarifying points. That spreadsheet is not the entire TIF program. That document that we've been using to show last year the Commission approved the projects in white to be added to the program, and then last month they approved the highlighted projects to be added. So that's not the entire program. The entire program is much longer. So if you don't see your project on there, that's why. It didn't disappear. And then the second clarification, the Fort Rockwell project is not approved by either body, either the commission nor the council. It is on the list for a future action. Is that fair?
Okay. That's correct. Thank you.
Any questions on any of those, though?
Any questions? Comments?
I would just note, keep this table handy, because it may be helpful when we get towards the end of the meeting to talk about pending legislation.
That green box on top.
Okay. Very good. Okay, then Ben, we'd have you go on concerning the board modifications that you're presenting today. This is an action item, this section, right?
Yes, thank you. Wonderful. So in this, in your packet with this resolution is a list of several tables, and each of these tables has several projects identified. We'll go through each one of these projects as it is an action item by this body. The first project, or maybe to highlight at first, before I've segmented it, so we'll talk about one sheet at a time. So you'll turn to the first sheet, it'll identify the two projects that we'll talk to, and then when we've completed those, it'll show the next sheet, and then we'll go into the next projects to talk about. So the very first project that's listed on this paper is a project up in West Weber County. And maybe to kind of introduce or help you understand the significance of the responsibilities we have, this particular project involves the urban SDP funds in the Ogden-Layton urban area. Now, the Ogden-Layton urban area extends all the way from North Salt Lake all the way up through Brigham City. So it has quite a large geographical area with an amount of funds that's not exceptional. Well, it's a lot of money, but it's not enough. And so the responsibilities for this body to manage or to make recommendations becomes critical for the success to get the most out of the money that is available. Also, I want to make you familiar. So this is the area where this project will be discussed, but there's quite a bit that's going on, not only with our federal funds, but with the participation of the department and the participation from the county. The first project that's up in this area that's underway is this project right here on 4000. This will be a widening project that will take a narrow two-lane section from Midland Drive all the way out to 5100 West. Now, initially, the Regional Council, from recommendations from Transcom, approved about $3.8 million in urban STP funds for one section right about in this area along 4000. Weber County also identified the needs for this facility to be improved, and they approved $10 million of their dollars that went from Midland all the way to 51. But that was still not quite enough to get this project done. The department, seeing and recognizing the efforts of both the Regional Council and the local entities up there, programmed an additional $15 million for this project. Now, also in addition to the work going on, the Regional Council approved some funds here on 4700 West. The idea was, is there's one particular section of 4700 West that does not exist. That would require new construction and the reconstruction of this part. Well, there was enough work done on that that the Weber County also identified the need to program some funds there. Now, the problem was, is the STP funds were programmed for 2020. And the WACOG money was going to be available as early as 2016. So this body took action. Here it is. We're standing on 4800 South. We're looking north. So here's the section that does not exist. And our section that we originally programmed was from about 41 down to 48. Well, this body took action and we said, well, let's move the WACOG money down and focus it on the new construction area. And then we'll move the SDP funds to the northern portion and plug that into one of the improvements along 4000. So when this is all said and done, we're going to, whoops, I jumped ahead. Now I lost all my gunpowder. Pretend you didn't see any of those, because here we go again. So the WACOG then funded this amount right here, or approved this so that this new section of road could be constructed sooner than later. And then our funds will come in at 2020 or earlier if possible to reconstruct from about 46 up to 4,000. Now, last year, there was a request from Hooper, and this request was a little further south on 4700 West. This went from where the new intersection, or this was the piece that we just talked about, from 4800 down to 54th. But we didn't have quite enough money. It was quite a large request. So Hooper divided that request in half, and this was a request. So if we would go from 48 to 5100, the requested amount was 2.7 plus million, This body recommended, the regional council approved, and so coming back, the regional council approved that 2.7 plus million for that northern section. WIDCOG come in and says, you know, well done. HOPR was requesting the additional funds, and they approved the funding that would complete that whole facility. Now, here we are again, faced with the timing of this project. So let's just zoom in. Now we're looking south from 4800. So this is 4800 right here, and we're looking south, and this is 54. Well, the new project would plug in right there and would also involve improvements to that whole intersection. Well, it wouldn't do any good to improve that whole intersection when the improvements to the south weren't going to happen until 2021. So the request came after discussions with the department, the project sponsors, that if we can move WACOG money and have it focus on the north end of that segment and move the SDP or the Wasatch Front money to the southern portion, then we would be able to plug all of these projects in. We'd at least have a new facility, a new intersection, and an improved facility by 2016-2017. And so the request in this particular one is just the change of project scope. Rather than being on the north end, we've changed it to the south end. Funding amounts remain the same. It's just a matter of timing on this project. Now the next request on that piece of paper, I turned this sideways so we could get the whole idea here along. This is on I-215. This particular project is focusing right here on some of the ramps. If you came from the north, you may perhaps were on this unless you were on Legacy. But this is on the ramps that are right here on I-215 and I-15. There's three structures there. You may recall they did some work on the parapets a little while ago. And now they did some pothole patching, some beam repairs, as well as some improvements to the joints. The request there was for an additional $273,000 to close this project out and finish it up. Those funds come from the efficiency funds from Region 1. Now we move on to the next sheet. The next sheet of project also has two projects that are identified on it. The first one is on I-15 in this particular area. Now that might look familiar because this body took action on this project about 6 months ago. When they took, the department suggested that we take several projects and combine them together to get a better cost savings on the project, reduce the impact to the traveling public, and just to get all the projects done earlier. So what it included was some pavement rehabilitation, essentially from SR 273, which is 200 North, on up to the South Lane Interchange. It also would include the auxiliary project that goes from the rest area all the way up to 200 North, as well as some ramp metering on 200 North. And that made for one beautiful project that went all the way from Lagoon, because there was already a pavement rehabilitation project on there that those other projects plugged into. So we had improvements on mainline I-15 from Lagoon all the way up to the South Lane Interchange. This request is to add a little more to the scope, and that is to do some pavement rehab up here. What it would do is include a bond wearing course to I-15 from South Layton up to the Layton Hills Mall Interchange there at exit 232 or Gordon Avenue. The request is for $1.5 million. It would make this total project, which will be go out for construction, I believe, next year, a total project cost of a little more than $20 million. The next project there is the first of three asset management projects. Now, the asset management program, as you're aware, there's a lot of assets, but there's not a lot of pots of money. A lot of the assets are requiring on bits and pieces of funding that get saved or preserved from other resources. The department has identified a strategy that would enable them to develop larger pots of resources to get a lot of these needs taken care of on a little sooner schedule. This particular one comes in This is in Willard, and this is on US 89. And what this will do is do some shoulder improvements along US 89, and that'll take some grading, some surfacing. The requested amount for this particular project, it's new to the program, is $3 million. And this will come from the efficiency funds of Region 1. That efficiency fund program is those cost savings that have been identified. Because the region's been able to take care of all their pavement needs, these funds were freed up, and now they're able to be used towards assets, or the asset management program that has been prioritized. So then we move on to the third sheet. Now this third sheet has four projects on it. The first two are also asset management, or come from the asset management program. Therefore, the clear zone improvement projects, these particular projects here, they're actually divided into two groups. It encompasses essentially the full region of Region 1. The first projects include those in Box Elder, Cache, and Rich counties, and the latter would involve the three counties of Weber, Davis, and Morgan, $2 million. So we combine those two together, it's $3 million for these two projects in the asset management. What it's going to address is more of slope and drainage issues throughout the region. The next project there is an interesting project. This one actually is taking place on Boehner Highway due to some improvements that were made, but a lawsuit was resolved, and we'll walk through that real quick.
Just skip it.
Okay. I thought it was pretty awesome what the department did. So here we are. It's on this particular section of Boehner. Now, you may recall the old Kmart store that sat here just west of Boehner Highway. And if you'll recall, years ago, before there were improvements to Boehner, there was an off-ramp and there was an on-ramp on the Boehner Highway. But because of the demands that were necessary on Boehner, because of the amount of ADT and the amount of traffic throughout this area, there were some necessary improvements that needed to take place on Boehner Highway. Here, let's zoom in just a little so you can see here a little better. You can see how this lane comes on and is able to exit there, and then you were able to enter right there. Well, as the traffic build up, that particular on and off ramp, it's not really a ramp, but in and out, really wasn't used as much as it could have been because of the volumes of traffic. So these were the improvements that took place. Now, did you see that cool transition? I'll do it just one or two more times. All right, so what we've got here is we've got the CFI. See how the left turn lanes, remember how the CFI, how we've moved them now to the west side of the facility? Well, if you look where the entrance and the exit were, there was no way that facility could remain and enable us to have the improvements that took place on Boehner Highway. So the complaint was, is the amount of access was reduced. Well, the department was aware of that, and so from the very beginning, so here's what it looked like beforehand. So you can see the full intersection right off the slide right here is the in and out. But so here's how the access, look, when you'd have a lot of traffic, how busy, you can just imagine how that road would fill right up. So the department went in, and they made these improvements there. Now, look at the kind of access that's available for in this. And talking with a lot of people, the traffic actually increased going into this facility. However, there was a lawsuit filed, and these funds, the additional funds, are necessary to pay for the litigations. And so there was a request for a little more than $5 million for this particular project.
So Ben, just to clarify, we had offered, clearly that's an impact to Kmart, less access for some more or less access. We offered $2 million, Kmart didn't accept it, we went to court, the court awarded them $5 million.
Is that Kmart still open?
No.
I don't think so.
No, it's not.
No, it is not.
It's not.
Now the next project.
No, I was thinking of it more, not for Kmart's sake, but just thinking they weren't even open. Why were they fighting the...
The next project then takes place on 106 South Interchange. As you're well aware, there's a lot of traffic that travels along I-15, and part of the improvements here on this interchange is to help minimize or reduce the amount of traffic through this area by using other routes to get the traffic from the freeway onto the surface street. This is improvements to ramps that have already been approved and funding's been approved for. However, there's a request for some additional funds. And the additional funds come as a result of additional right-of-way that's necessary to address some drainage issues because of the improvements that will be needed, as well as to manage the traffic through this area through the construction period. So the request is for an additional $5.5 million. I might mention that these funds, as well as the funds in the last request, are coming from contingency savings on other projects.
Can you describe what's happening there on the east side of the interchange? Is that a flyover?
It's a tunnel coming up.
A tunnel?
Check it out. Now this moves us to the last sheet in this board modification. This whole sheet here, this whole table here is a list of there's seven projects that were recommended from Region 1 to enter the Transportation Alternative Program. There were three of those seven that are specifically in our area. The first one is up in Plain City. This is a sidewalk improvement in this area. What it'll do is address the need where there's existing sidewalks. You can also tell there's some structure work that's necessary where you have some bottleneck. Anyway, the total project cost is about $71,000. TAP funds awarded just a little more than $35,000 with a local match of about $35,000. The next project is along 3000 North or Fisher Highway or SR 193. This particular request come in from Layton. This is also a sidewalk project, and this project would also address existing sidewalk improvements as well as areas where new sidewalk would need to be constructed. The requested amount was for $88,000 in TAP funds with their match of $86,000 for a total project cost of $174,000. And then the third project was up in Brigham City. This is on 200 South. And this actually goes from about 8th West up to 6th East. This also is a sidewalk project addressing existing sidewalk and constructing new sidewalk. The request was for $50,000 with a local match of a little more than $32,000 for a total project cost of $82,000. So here is all those projects that were first listed on that sheet of paper. The three projects that are in our area are listed right here, and they have a total there of a requested amount of just under $200,000. Project estimated cost of about $328,000. And so there's about a 39.5% match, or $129,000 that were applied for match. Look at the significance of the match here. Whoops. Jumped into the end. I'm just excited. Right here, about 59%, making a $500,000 pot of money. Incidentally, Region 1 is putting in some of their own contingency money, but taking $1.2 plus million worth of projects, a significant benefit to the overall system by both the locals and the department. But that would conclude all of the board modifications.
Any questions for Ben?
Where is bond and wearing? Can you put that on a road? What does that do?
Yes. So when we design a pavement, we design it so I can say it's 6 inches. The top 1 inch is a wearing surface, so that we can come in and take that off and put it back as needed, as it wears down. That's a bonding wearing, of course, is one treatment, one type of treatment for that top 1 inch. It's just a type of treatment that when it rains, it drains off very well. It's just asphalt.
And do you put it on where it's heavy traffic, is that what you do?
Yeah.
Because it wears out faster?
Yeah, we replace them every about 10 to 12 years, we replace the top edge.
Every 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get any crack seal or anything like that on
it? We occasionally do. If that top does crack, we'll crack seal it. On most of our high volume roads, we resurface them enough that we don't end up with a lot of that. But we do block, we do crack seal.
Thank you. And then I just had one other question. On that intersection, you talked about improvements on that intersection, but you didn't say what improvements you were going to make.
On 106 South?
No, it was one of the first projects. That's one of the first ones. Up in Weaver County.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
That intersection right there.
Yes. So what that'll do is, as we're bringing that new road, first it'll add a new leg to the intersection,
right.
So it'll be a uniform four-legged intersection. But it'll add turn lanes, right turn, it'll also put left turn pockets in there so that you're through traffic. It'll be signed. It doesn't warrant a signal at this time, so it'll have stop signs. Currently there's a east-west stop sign on that facility, but it's a fairly high-speed traveled road. And so this will put a four-way stop in that intersection.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
Erin, please.
Ben, all of the additional findings make sense to me except for the one on page 2 for $1.5 million, which is just the expansion of the scope, it sounds like. And I'm wondering why, if there's significant cost savings and broadening the scope as opposed to having that additional section where they go through its own application. The other additional funding to make sense is like contingencies of the projects or the litigation, but that one, it doesn't make sense to me.
The lagoon to Lincoln?
Yeah.
So when Ben had that map up, our project was this long and that left a little piece that hadn't been touched in a long time. So
and had the portion north of that section?
Yes.
Been approved recently?
It had. This was, so the section we were going to work on is down here. There's a little gap and then there was a section that was fairly new. So we were leaving about a half mile section.
Why wasn't it included originally in the project proposal?
That's a good question. I think that, to be quite honest, we blew it and didn't go far enough. And once we scoped the entire project, we went, hey, we missed about half a mile that we had. But
I was just running out of money, Shane.
That's even a better answer. We ran out of money.
Well, my second question, I think, will be also for you. How can we know that in the future when we fund projects, that we can be more sure that we won't be negatively impacting businesses around and end up in future litigation?
A great question. In that particular case, we're going to impact businesses on occasion, right? And if they have a right to access, we have to pay for that access in particular. And that's what we did. We came in and the project needed that. You couldn't access the vineyard right there any longer because you couldn't make those limits. So for safety concerns, we had to take that away. The property owner was due some compensation for that, so we tried two things. We made the access like Ben showed, we did the access, and then we offered some money for the compensation for that. We just didn't agree on the price, and part of that conversation leads to court decides on what the fair market value is, and that's what happened. But our first step is to not impact them. But when we do,
is it possible, and I know this is UDOT more than it is this committee, is it possible to begin that dialogue with the property owners well before?
Oh yeah, in this case, and that project is, when's it going to be finished? May 6 years. We finished it 6 years ago, so we had the conversation 10 years ago, and we just finally settled the litigation.
So you just couldn't come to an agreement even 10 years ago?
Correct. Huh. Yep.
That's what happens when you get lawyers involved.
No comment, Andrew?
Problem solvers.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
I agree with the mayor.
We are. We are out in front of them much more now than we were 10 years ago.
Ben, do we know whether that Kmart actually lost business because of this after all is said and done with the new modifications that were made? Is their business as good as it ever was, or better or worse?
Well, the Kmart chain, not to talk for them, they've actually reduced their stores. And that store doesn't exist because of the Kmart chain.
I was just asking last week. That's why I wonder what we're talking about. Is it isn't even open.
And they closed the Davis County one as well. But
regardless of what the business was, there was a safety impact that had nothing to do with who was in that parcel.
Correct.
It could have been a very active parcel.
Right. I don't think the Settles were Kmart itself. It was what the owners of the building that is that now is Kmart.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have one there.
Please.
I just noticed on one of these projects there was matching funds from local government. How are those treated in terms of priority? Is a project pushed on the top of the list that they've got matching funds from local government, or?
It helps significantly for two things. One, it depends on when those funds are programmed. For example, the SDP project that we talked about in the very beginning, where we went in with an amount of SDP funds. County came in with a significant amount of money, and that facility needed to be done, and UDOT, after a year or so of their preparatory work, they were able to contribute to it.
I like that approach. The only question I would have is, let's say because of transportation money being very dire, Proposition 1 not, in this particular county, not passing. How does that impact project? Are we certainly, as you've said, it's going to have a priority if they're matching, but if they can't match for whatever reason, how is that project viewed then?
Well, in our urban funds, the funds that we have the responsibility to program for, there's a minimum by federal guidelines, 6.77%. And that's what we look at. Now, if the pot gets sweetened because someone has a significant amount of input, that's just part of the considerations that the committees make. We still look for the best project for the amount of funds possible. If that helps us, if that project is a priority, and they've sweetened the deal with more money, then there is a good chance that it moves forward. If not this time, perhaps the next time. But we have criteria, and we can't be bought.
I just would hate to have a project not go forward because, for whatever reason, local government could match.
Yeah,
I'm hoping it's based on the fact that that project needs to be done. It's just got to be done, and whether it's matched or not, if it's matched, it pushes it up further, but it still has to be done. I'm hoping it's viewed in that way.
Mayor, if I might add, the vast majority of projects that the regional council funds have that 6.77% match. The UDOT TAP program that you see here, and each region has one, they require a much higher match.
We don't require.
Okay.
Or encourage, I guess. We would encourage. We would do a cost-benefit ratio and rank them by cost-benefit, and if the local put more money in, cost-benefit would go up. So we would rank higher, but the match wouldn't be required. So the project wouldn't drop off the list if the local could come up with it. Still be there for the rank this high.
One other thing that's perhaps related to this, and I don't know if this is what you were getting at all, Mayor, but when we, WFRC, allocate the funds that are at our disposal, the federal funds, the ones that Ben talks about, STP, CMAQ, and TAP, you may remember that there's a distinction between Salt Lake County and then the northern areas, the northern counties. Okay, so the fact you mentioned Prop 1, the fact that Prop 1 didn't pass in Salt Lake County has no impact on the allocation of funds among counties. I mean, if Weber and Davis may have, and Box Elder, well, not Box Elder, Weber and Davis may have more funds available, but that's not going to impact Salt Lake County because the pot of funds that are available in Salt Lake County does not intermingle with the funds that are available in the northern area. Okay.
Well, my point was just that like I said, when projects need to be done, I just hope, regardless of the local contribution, that they still go forward and are not held back because, for whatever reason, the local government can't match
their needed products.
Yeah.
You know, Mayor, my observation has been that we moved a long ways from any kind of political funding like used to be or to a need funding. And there really has been a big change in that, directed by the Transportation Commission, in my opinion, and also the legislature. So there's been that move over the years, over the last 10, 12, 15 years.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so is there any other questions on this issue here?
Mr. Chair.
Hey, Shane, please.
Go back to that $1.5 million question that Karen asked. It was not a great answer. So each region, each year, gets a pot of money to do asphalt preservation. The region has, and they get a 3-year allocation, they get money every 3 years. The region decided to take 6 years' money and place it here so they could combine the project into one project instead of coming back next year and doing this section and then that section. So it didn't take away from a project, it just advanced that project. Does that make better sense?
Yes, and I assume
that there is a lot of cost
savings in combining
it
with
other work. But it
didn't
make sense that it wasn't included initially.
Okay, no problem. Okay, is there any other questions?
Mayor, I move that we approve the board modifications to the 2016-21 TIP funds.
Second, any discussion to the motion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then we will move on to the next item, Ben.
Great. Thank you. That's our 2015 obligation report. In your packet, you'll have a report that is required by FAST Act has reinstalled this requirement that every year we report back to our body the amount of funds that have been obligated, federal funds that have been obligated in the state during the past year. So for information, obligation kind of has its own unique understanding. So I've got a definition here. An obligation is a federal government legal commitment to reimburse the states or other entities for the federal share of projects' eligible costs. There are parts of projects that are not eligible. It's also important to know the obligated project is one that has been approved by the federal government to be reimbursed. So as we move through our process, and I'll go through that in just a second, you'll know that the federal government, once we've obligated the funds, or once we have what's called a federal aid agreement in place, then we can move forward on that project with the reassurance that we will be reimbursed for those funds that are paid. So, something else to be noted there, obligated projects were not necessarily initiated or completed during this year, and obligated amounts reflected in this report also may not equal to the final project cost. And you'll see that too as we go through. So, to kind of help illustrate this, I've took a snapshot of part of the sheet of our Salt Lake STP program. And I took this particular section because what we show is we show the projects themselves right here. You can see the city that the project's located or the project sponsor. Here's some identification relating to that project. Here's the name of the project and the location. Any improvements? I realize you can't read this, but just to kind of lay it out here. Then you come into the year the project was funded, the estimated cost, the amounts that were programmed in federal, and then right here is the part I wanted to get to. Here's our year, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Here's where we have the funds distributed for these particular projects. Now the very first project up here, you'll notice, has nothing in these boxes. All of his funds are sitting right here in that blue column, and that blue column indicates those funds that have been obligated as of the conclusion of 2015. Some of these others have partial. Well, how does that happen? Well, when a project is first starting off, the project sponsor walks that project through some preliminary engineering and the environmental document. That is on the responsibility of the project sponsor. When we have a completed environmental document, one that's been approved by the department, there's a document called the Federal Aid Agreement, or the FAA, which is signed. That is our agreement with Federal Highways, that now the project expenses beyond that that are eligible are and will be reimbursed. So we obligate some funds right there to begin the design work. The design work works on that project and gets it already up to the point to where we identify that there's some right-of-way needs, so additional funds are obligated for that project. Once we've got the right-of-way completed, the design, then we prepare and we go out for advertisement and construction. So the bulk of the money is then obligated so that that project can move forward. Once the project is all completed and the final audits are done, the project is closed out, and any money that was not spent is deobligated back into the programs. The sponsor doesn't keep it. If it was SKP funds that were spent, we had $100 there and they only spent $60, $40 comes back to the SKP program, and that's where we have some of those cushions to help us when we program for projects that request additional funds. Or if there's no request, that gives us those funds in the front year to push up the back projects and program new projects on the back end of the program. So in your packet, what you'll see is the very first chart is a bar chart, this blue one. These are the federal funds that have been obligated statewide, the Federal Highway statewide funds. Now we put them into these silos, and that particular silo doesn't represent the whole full project. For example, there may be a project out here that has surfacing or resurfacing. Well, that particular project may have had some intersection or safety improvements. There may have been some structures in that. There may have been a signal in there. There may be bike and ped improvements in there. But the bulk of the project was spent in the resurfacing or reconstruction or whatever it is. And so that's where the project has been marked, or that's where it's been tagged. But know and understand that there is obligations and deobligations happening for that project in several silos as the project moves through the process. So you can see that statewide we obligated in 2015 about $351+ million. Now the next chart, these are the obligations within the Wasatch Front area. So from Brigham City all the way down to MAG, these are the funds. We've maintained the same silos, but these are the same types of funds. So these types of projects represent a various type, everything from active transportation to significant brand new capacities on facility. Now, here's something. If you're looking real close there, you'll notice, and we'll toggle back and forth just to again highlight those pretty colors. No, the blue one here, for example, on miscellaneous, we're showing a little more than $5 million. Here in the, now, how did that happen? Here in the Wasatch Front, we're showing $6 million. Well, outside of the Wasatch Front area, there was more deobligation on a particular project, and that took the overall amount. But that deobligated project was outside of the Wasatch Front area, so that doesn't reflect on the obligation totals that took place in the Wasatch Front area. So that's where we get some of these numbers. Then if you come into the SDP funds, we combine these silos just a little there because some of the projects, we didn't have new projects. For example, large structures, we didn't have any big large structures this past year. So we eliminated that, miscellaneous, and so you can see how the funds both in the SDP, in the Salt Lake, West Valley, the Ogden Layton, the CMAC funds and the TAF funds, how they were spent overall. Realizing and understanding that, for example, let's go here to the bike pen. We'll show a project in a minute, but these big projects here where all these dollars were spent, I can wager a giant ice cream that they included a lot of these other guys in that particular project. They're just not reflected in this because they're being identified in that silo right there. Any questions on that? Well, then there's a chart that you won't have in your table, and that is the Federal Transit Agency. Now, if when we get in, and I got the tables here to show you them as well, there's a little difference in the way the FTA reports and Federal Highways reports. FTA works on ongoing grants, and so the tables in there will identify the grant, and that particular grant is coming and going with funds throughout the season, and so it's hard to say what's been obligated and what's deobligated, so we list the full grant there. But out of the federal funds, the federal plus the match, 66% of those projects have been capital improvements, 34% of them have been operation and maintenance. So here's those tables on the transit. And incidentally, in your packet, you'll see the tables for the STP, CMAC, and the TAP programs that can help identify what the other projects are. But so the dark blue are capital improvements, the light blue are the operation and maintenance. So this comes down, here's where our graph was formed right here. But you can see, out of the capital improvements, 66% out of the total there with the local match and the federal participation. So, well, that's great. So what does that really mean? Well, here's a couple of projects to illustrate. The first one here would be out on 5600 West. This one was an STP project. We show that there was 3.9 plus million that was obligated this past year. This was almost an $8 million project. Well, this project runs from 6200 South to 70th South. You can see how the existing facility, how at the intersection here at 70, you had a full width. But then it necked down real quick to a two-lane facility, and in some areas there were sidewalk and some there was not. But what this particular structure or particular improvements did on this was we've got the old pictures to your left and the new to the right. Look at the beautiful improvements. So here's standing on 70th South right here. So we've got a five-lane section, you've got your left turn, you've got your bike on either side, you've got curb gutter and sidewalk on either side, and that translates all the way down the project. So this project, if you look where it's listed, is shown in the STP, and it's for the construction and capacity. It says nothing about the bike. So now you know that some of those projects in there are represented in several silos. Well, here's another project. There were various ATMS projects throughout the area along the Wasatch Front, 1.2 plus million. These are the kind of improvements that come along with the ATMS improvements. There was another project here in Bountiful. This was an intersection on 5th South, a DDI or a diverging diamond interchange. Well, looking at this facility, it went from about 750 West up through the intersection at 2nd West. Looking, here we are looking westbound, and here we are, this is the interchange is being worked on here. You can see the widening here underneath. Well, let's come down. Here's what it looked like before and the traffic pattern. So we had two lanes crossing underneath. You can see now Google there is kind of putting in the traffic movements there with its yellow line. So here's what it looks like now. So you have a diverging diamond that goes underneath it. Here's another look of it prior. And there you are looking east underneath the structure. You'll notice there's only one sidewalk that was on the north side of that facility. And there we are looking west through the facility. You've got access from pedestrian from either side. They go to the center and they're protected through the center. And then they have access to either side and there's sidewalks going down both sides. Another one here, we'll hear about in a minute, is Green Bike, the expansion there, $176,000 on this particular project. Another one there is in Washington Terrace. This was on Adams Avenue. There was $589,000 that was obligated on this project. Another one was a TAP project in Midvale on 7th West. This particular project went from 72 to 78. What it did is improved crossways for pedestrians and bikes, as well as underneath the rail facility here, making it safer for both bicycle and pedestrian traffic. Another project here in Salt Lake County on 2300 East. Now this is one of them obligations. We've had 7.7 plus million that was obligated for this project, hasn't started yet. It'll go under construction this spring. So what it'll entail to do is a minor widening, full reconstruction with curb gutter and sidewalk improvements and ADA improvements. Then we've got this project. We haven't seen a lot. You'll notice there's not a lot in the Ogden Lake urban area. Why is that? Well, couple of years ago, you'll recall, you approved six projects to be exchanged for federal funds. Those projects now are underway, but we're marching, or we're watching them through another resource. And what we've got here is we've got, there was $20 million in federal funds that were exchanged for $17-plus million. What this did was enable the department to take that $3 million, and they were able to advertise that project with all the optional award items, and that full project was completed with the additional advertisement or options to bid, to advertise, and it still come in under budget. So because of that significant coordination there, we were able to save a lot of money and accomplish a lot of work. But that would conclude the obligation report.
Any questions on that? Okay, thank you very much, Ben, for all of your reports.
Mayor, can I just make a very brief comment?
Absolutely.
I just want to thank Ben. As you can tell, there is a whole heck of a lot of coordination that goes on in working between and among all of our partners and with all the funding sources, and he does a great job of navigating all of this stuff and trying to keep projects moving and helping you, our members, working with UDOT and UTA. So, Ben, thank you very much.
Hey, we'd also like to recognize, we're not saying this that you were late. We know there's weather and traffic and everything else, but just to get to know each other, Mayor Zanini from Midvale has joined with us since we introduced, and Mayor Walker from Draper, and Councilwoman Mendenhall from Salt Lake City Council. And you're appointed through air quality, is that, am I remembering that right?
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple hats.
Okay. Well, we're happy to have you three join with us as well as everybody else that's here today. We would now like to turn the time to Wayne to talk about the bike share report.
And I'll just give introductions. We're very grateful to have Ben Falte here, who's the director of Green Bikes in Salt Lake City. He'll talk about the existing bike share program. And also, we're grateful to have Jennifer McGrath, the senior planner with UTA, who will talk about some options they're looking at for expanding bike share throughout the region. So, turn it over to Ben and Jennifer.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. I've been asked today to give an overview of what bike share is, what the benefits are, our results to date, and our plans for the future in 5 minutes or less. So we will get that done.
We will give you six.
God bless you, sir. All right, so Green Bike is Salt Lake City's nonprofit bike share program. We are a 501c3, and a variety of public and private partners are involved. Our chair this year is the Chief Planning Officer for UTA, Matt Sibyl. We also have representation from the Downtown Alliance, Salt Lake City Mayor's Office, UDOT Region 2, the Wasatch Front Regional Council, Salt Lake City's Transportation Division Director, Visit Salt Lake, which is the Convention and Visitors Bureau, Horrocks Engineers, Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, Holland and Hart, Select Health, City Creek, and a firm called Twio Brand. Now, have most people had a chance to ride a bike share bike or seen a bike share in any city, anywhere? Okay, all right. It's not great, but we will move forward. So right now we have 25 of these downtown bike sharing stations. You can walk right up to the kiosk, you pay $7, and you can take any bike from any station, return it to any station at all, and make as many of those trips as you like for 24 hours. There's a map located at every station that shows you where all the rest of them are. And once you return the bike, your time resets. If you want to keep a bike out for longer than 30 minutes at a time, it's just $3 for each additional hour. We also offer mobile applications that the user can download for free, so you can see in real time how many bikes and docks are available at each station. And annual users get an RFID card sent to them so they can simply tap any dock in our entire system or in 15 other cities to remove your bike. It keeps track of how many miles you didn't put out in your car, how many pounds of CO2 you didn't put out in the atmosphere, how many pounds you burned in calories, all sorts of fun stuff. The bikes themselves are designed for riding in the urban environment. Chain guards, skirt guards, step-through frame, automatic front and rear LED lights, and the bikes are cleaned every day. They're designed to get city dwellers out and for behavioral change. Last year we introduced our Make-A-Wish bike, which is the first unicorn bike in our system. That means that of the 210, 220 bikes that were on the street last year, there was one blue bike. And every time this bike was ridden, Green Bike and Select Health donated a dollar to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Now, this bike was ridden 60% more than the average green bike last year. It creates interesting marketing and promotional opportunities. Find the bike, get your picture taken on it, we give you a free annual pass, etc. But it also shows just how more the bikes can be used. Now, the reasons to do this, the primary benefits and goals, it creates a public transit enhancement by making it easier to utilize our existing public transportation infrastructure. It improves air quality, community health, encourages downtown living, assists in economic development, creates new cyclists, and addresses the gender gap in cycling, encourages infill development, reduces parking demand, reduces traffic congestion, and extends the roadway life cycle. So if a car weighs several thousand pounds and a bike only weighs 50, and the majority of all car trips only have one person in them, that's a lot less wear and tear on the actual road. Now, our strategy to achieve success is to generate maximum benefits, utilization, and behavioral change by implementing a convenience-driven, high-density system. So we want to get the most bang for our buck. And to do that, we have focused on station density. That means the amount of bike share stations in a defined service area. Right here is about 2.1 square miles. Over here is 6th West, UTA's office on 620, 640 West. Over here is 6th East, North Temple, 5th South. The pink are the stations that were added last year, funded in part through a Wasatch Front Regional Council TAP grant, and then the Salt Lake City Council and then the Salt Lake City Redevelopment Agency each put in $75,000, bringing us to 25 stations. The blue stations were also expanded with these funds, and you can see it's basically a station almost every block in the major areas of downtown. Now, as a result of this, ridership increased by almost 292% in the immediate 34% expansion. So here we have our operational season, end of March, early April, through the end of December. This represents the amount of trips per week. The gold line is our 2013 season, with 65 bikes and 11 stations. When we expanded by about 82%, we had 184% increase in ridership, with 113 bikes at 16 stations. But here, when we expanded, that difference of 20 to 25 stations in that defined service area made it so much more convenient to so many people that we were able to dramatically increase our ridership numbers. And that stayed fairly consistent until you hit anything below 50 degrees in temperature. A lot less people are willing to ride. But through our office pass program, we are generating 292% greater increase in our total annual pass sales. We actually won an award for this at a national bike share conference. That's the CEO of B-Cycle, which has bike share systems in 40 cities. And to look at it from another perspective, these are our stations. Each one represents a station from our system last year. Blue is the amount of checkouts every single day at a station. Green is the amount of checkouts every single day at a station in 2015. Blue is 2014. So the average increase at every station was 105%, again, just by increasing the number of stations in the defined service area. But new stations went in, and they were at a higher number than most of the stations were the year before. So all the new stations start off better than the existing stations. We had a 106% increase in the number of unique users, 14,500 in 2014 to about 30,000 in 2015. Sales went up by 98%, over 17,500 passes to over 34,000 passes. And to put these numbers in perspective, each bike is used more than twice a day, every day for the entire season. Sometimes it gets up over five times. We also have each bike ridden for the entire season about 536 times last year. The year before that, it was only about 410. But both of those numbers put us far and above any system of our size in the country. This is where we will be by late April, early May of this year. The paint stations are the ones going in that are new, blue, or expanded. We're going at about half a mile and then filling in the remaining gaps. So we're taking a proven strategy, applying it again, and I think around one or two more stations after this, we'll have our amount of saturation in the downtown core and be able to expand out farther, hitting residential areas. Yes, sir.
I was just going to ask you, how much is the ridership? Have you kept track of the ridership of visitors versus the local people?
Yeah, we do an annual report every year, and we're in the midst of finishing ours right now, but it's stayed fairly consistent. About 25-30% are from out of state. The majority, about 50%, 45% that have been Salt Lake County, and the rest are from regional areas, Provo, Ogden. We have the zip code of every user. It's just a requirement to access the network, so those numbers are really accurate. This is where we'd like to be by 2020. We need another $4.7, maybe as low as $4 million in funding. This will get us to 100 stations and 1,000 bikes. This is over at 9th and 9th, Liberty Park, over into more of the Rose Park area, Marmalade, here's the Capitol, Avenues. The rail line connected on here, along with the front runner lines, are really crucial to our success. They generate very little revenue for the system, however, generate consistent ridership and the most net benefits. So somebody willing to get out of their car in Ogden, hop on a train, come down, and then not need their car in downtown, obviously creates a lot more of an air quality improvement. Sir?
How do we get this expanded out outside of the main downtown corridor? I know in my city, and I'm sure there's other mayors that have them along, we have a front runner stop and two light rail stops. And I've had many businesses that are located near front runner. They want to get this, and they're willing to make some donations to make it happen. How can we go about trying to get some of it just even outside of this downtown corridor, but out to some of the other stops? Because I think certainly in my city it would be used. It would be a way to connect front runner to light rail, frankly, because it's about a 2 mile span.
No, absolutely. We've received a lot of interest, and it's something that I wish we could follow up more on. Jen McGrath's going to be presenting the results of our regional governance model, which we basically started to put together to address these very issues, because there is so much pent-up demand. However, the reality for us is we're still trying to focus on getting our basic core system out. What you see right here is a full-court basketball game, and what we have right now is a backboard and a rim on somebody's garage. And so if we really want to get the most benefits, we should implement this first. And we're also coming from a perspective of operationally, right now about 60% of all of our operating expenses come from private sponsors, and there's a greater potential for that in downtown Salt Lake City. So until it gets treated more like the mode of public transportation, which we believe it is, it really limits our ability to expand. But I'm hoping that we can do that in the very near future.
Is that a franchisable type of operation? Or?
No, not really. We are a completely local organization that has partners, as you saw, with other local organizations. You could try. I mean, you could buy your own equipment and operate it. Just to put the numbers in, I think a really solid example would be need about $65,000 to $75,000 in capital costs per station, and probably around $25,000 to $28,000 in operating costs per station annually. And depending on the location, it's going to generate between $2,000 in revenue to $24,000 in revenue. So even the best station, the station on South Temple and Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City, I have yet to find any other station in another system that beats those numbers, except in like New York or Chicago, and that one only generates less than $25,000 a year. So they're all going to operate at a loss essentially, and it's a pretty large commitment. We're going to have to raise more than $500,000 this year in private sponsorships, but we have about 98% of those down. The goal should really be to work on legislation and influence policy at the federal level to get bike share trips treated as transit trips, so that more funding is available to implement them in areas outside of immediate urban areas.
And hopefully what I'm going to talk about in a couple minutes will help to sort of get at the answer that you're looking for as well.
But I'd be happy to come back anytime and talk in greater detail about any of this, or if anybody would like to meet later.
Any other questions? Were you able to finish any other information? Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having us here today. For those of you who I don't know, I'm Jennifer McGrath. I'm the Active Transportation Planner for the Utah Transit Authority. Really excited to be part of the conversation and talking about how we might be able to grow and expand a bike share program throughout our region. Just to give you a little bit of an overview of the study that we are just wrapping up, kind of a project overview, if you will. Really important to point out that this process was very much driven by stakeholders. Like the mayor mentioned, there are a lot of other communities that have seen the success that Salt Lake has had with this program, have seen bike share programs in other cities across the country, and who have said, we really want this for our community, we see the benefit of it, and we would like to make it happen for us. So many partners came together. UTA, UDOT, WFRC, MAG, Green Bike, multiple cities, counties, came together to talk about what are the goals and outcomes of this process that we're about to embark on. What are the pros and cons of different regional governance structures that we've seen throughout the country, and also potential ones that maybe aren't being used yet. And then really, we're really going about on a consensus building process to find out what works best for our region and what can the stakeholders really get behind in terms of a potential governance structure for a regional program. Just to give you a little bit of an overview of the process that we went through, our consultant team did a review of the current bike share program that we have here and their governance structure. They also did a thorough review of other existing programs throughout the country to see what else is out there and what other people are doing. And we had a steering committee that came together to look at things like what are all the options that are kind of out there on the table? What are the things that we think make sense for our community? What are going to be the benefits and the challenges of those different governance structures? For example, this is just one of the screening criteria we used, created a matrix that looked at things like which agencies are capable of collecting fares. That's something that a bike share system needs to do. Who's capable of doing that? Who is able to receive federal funding, for example? So the process was obviously a lot more in depth than that, but just to give you kind of an idea of the types of things that we looked at. I think it's also really important to point out that although we've completed kind of a phase one of an initial study, we're really kind of at the beginning of a long process here. We think that we've built a strong foundation in order to provide a recommendation on a governance structure that would work for our region here, but that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. We haven't come to the final answer yet. To give you a sense of sort of the narrowed down preferred governance structures that we really dug into to try to discuss which ones made the most sense for us, I'll talk in terms of owner-operator. So there was a Green Bike owner-operator option, a UTA owner Green Bike operator option, a UTA owner-operated option, and then a municipality owner Green Bike operated option. Now this was a whittled down list from a much larger list that we started out with, but these were the governance structures that seemed to make the most sense for our region. Again, coming together with the data that was collected and with all of our regional partners to talk about what are the different pros and cons of any of these structures. I'll go back here for a second. Ultimately, the consensus from the group was that we think the model that makes the most sense for us, based on the information we have today, is likely a UTA-owned Green Bike-operated model. That being said, still lots of outstanding issues to look into. I'll go into that a little bit later, but that's the recommendation we'll see when we get our final report, which should be forthcoming in the immediate future. give you a little sense of some other things that we're working on. UTA
Jen,
is partnering. Oh, yes.
I'm sorry. Can I just interrupt you for a
yes,
second?
Yes, please.
Is the idea for regionalization to do it in a phased way? So, like, it's in Salt Lake City now, and then first we would do it in Salt Lake City and Provo, you know, and then Ogden, and then Draper. Or is the idea that we would try to implement all at once to achieve those, you know, those the benefits from having saturation around the region?
So the idea right now is to come to consensus on what the appropriate governance structure and policy issues that need to be resolved are. And then once we know what that is, that structure can then put forth a plan of action. So for example, we've already started to sketch this out, if you will, to say if we did move forward with the model that is being recommended, if a city was interested in having bike share, we would have a path for that. Mm-hmm. For example, it could be city comes to UTA and Green Bike and puts in a formal request. There's a committee of some sort built of stakeholders that reviews those requests and applies particular criteria to that. Again, I'm just sort of speaking theoretically here because all of this hasn't been decided. But it would likely be things like, does said city have appropriate bicycle infrastructure to support a program? Does that city have the correct policies in place, or do they have policies that would prohibit a bike share station from being in a location where it would make the most sense? So for example, in Salt Lake City, a lot of that is in the public right of way on the sidewalk or in the park strips. So are there any policies that a city had that would prohibit that? And if so, what's the process for changing that?
The idea of this would be we want to make sure that if a city wants to move forward, that it's going to actually be successful.
Correct.
There's a whole bunch of criteria that we'd established to say, here's what we think based on our experience will translate to success.
Correct. And also, here's a path that you can follow to get to success. And here is how, as a region and as partners who believe in this program, how we're going to support you in that effort. So that you're not out there kind of doing this on your own. You're going to benefit from the experience of Ben and his team. You're going to benefit from the knowledge of the stakeholders as a whole. And hopefully there'll be some financial benefit to participating as a region as well. Just on a side note, we are working with Green Bike and the Volpe Institute to do a proof of concept, a pilot test for a joint payment, so payment integration. Again, kind of thinking towards the future about what really makes sense, what would make both the Green Bike program and the transit system function better for the end user. So eventually the idea is that you could have one card that would work for both systems. And eventually that could translate to other modes as well, car share, parking, bike lockers, any number of things. If the technology works and we can figure out back into accounting, this is something that would be scalable. In terms of next steps, really identifying outstanding issues for Green Bike, for Salt Lake City, and for UTA. So UTA has already gone through this process of trying to identify what the issues for our organization would be if we went forward with this. Everything from how would we maintain the 501c3 status, what are the legal issues that would come up as a result of owning a bike share program, how can we fund this kind of a program. For example, we could use passenger enhancement funds for the stations, but we aren't allowed to use those for the bikes, so really analyzing what our funding options are. Where do those funds come from? What are the contributions from the transit agency, from the cities, from Green Bike, from sponsorships? So really working out all of those details. And then really trying to understand what an organizational structure might look like. So again, we're kind of in the beginning phase of this process, but very excited about this as an opportunity. I think the main takeaway that I'd like to leave you with is that cities are very excited about the potential bike share for their communities. Again, they've seen the success in Salt Lake City. They realize the benefit to their community and they want to do this. So we're looking at a when question, not an if question. And really, this effort is moving forward as a means of building consensus around the idea that if we find an appropriate governance structure, we can really help Green Bike reach its full potential in the entire region.
Jennifer, yes. I'm the mayor of Brewston, and I appreciate what you're doing in Salt Lake City. It's half the answer. We want to get our people off the road and onto transit and to ride down. But we can't wait for you to come south. The reality of things are, is that I'm not critical. I understand things have to go in this county from north to south. But we're grateful for UDOT widening Redwood Road in Riverton. It's been basically the same for the last 40 years. You're talking about, if I understood this right, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're talking about Green Bike finishing out to Salt Lake City, expanding more by 2020.
No, what we're talking about is a way for all cities to have something.
I understand that, but we
and it wouldn't move from north to south. What we want is we want to set up a system and an opportunity for any city anywhere along the Wasatch Front to come forward and say, we are interested in this. What are the criteria and how can we move down a path towards implementation?
I appreciate that.
That would not be dependent on geography.
My experience has been, whether it be roads or transit or whatever, it rolls out, and I think we can support something between the mayors we have here. And so I would say keep doing what you're doing, but the other thing, somebody, and maybe it's the county we need to talk to, somebody needs to give us a plan how we could do it on our own and not get hung up in the funding and everything else in the bureaucracy part. If you can show us just some fundamentals, we can run with it. Because we can't wait. We honestly can't wait. And there's a lot of people ahead of us. I know there's money and there's funding and everything else, but we need to move this forth on our own. And we just need some simple guidelines to help us in that regard so we can go out and get it done.
And we absolutely want to provide that to you. I will point out too that one of the things that was most important to the stakeholders when we started this process was to make sure that from an end user perspective that this is seamless. So what we are trying to avoid, and we'll see what happens, is we're trying to avoid disparate systems that use different accounts with different vendors with different cards. What we would like to do is for anyone along the Wasatch Front to have a Green Bike card in their pocket and be able to use it anywhere. Your city, seamlessly, easily, and eventually also on the transit system.
And I don't mind that, and using the card, and that's an easy thing to work through. But I honestly believe it's going to take too long to meet our needs. We are, and Draper be the same, we be the same, Bluffdale. We have young people, young families, who need to cut back to one car because they have a high house payment. And we have these young guys that and women that will ride to a transit stop and move on. And so I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm fully supportive of what you're saying. But when you look at our area in the southwest part of the valley and the southeast part of the valley, I mean, there's a lot of cities that have much more concentrated population before you get to us. And so somehow, somebody, and so I don't know where it is, we just need some simple guidelines. But I'm very supportive because you handle the important end when they get there, but we need to get them there. And what we have in our city that's typical is that you have a young mother with kids who aren't up yet and dad has to go to work. And so to ride to the bus stops in our city, they have to drive because mom can't leave her kids home alone. They're not old enough. And take them there, and the bike is the solution, I think.
You know, where are you at?
We'll move as quickly as possible to do that.
Horses, too.
We're going to use horses.
just to kind of piggyback on that.
I like it.
I like the idea of the concept, but I'm with Mayor Appelbrook on this. Just at our front runner stop alone, I have five brand new buildings being constructed right now. There's going to be a couple thousand people working there in 6 months. There's five other buildings that have already been built. I mean, we just can't keep hearing in 5 years or 3 years because we have people the companies want to put these stations up there in front of their buildings so their employees will ride front runner to work. We have the Jordan River Parkway Trail that splits our two cities that we're bridging into our TOD, and then people that live in Bill City can ride their bike to work, or they can catch Green Bike or whatever it is. I'm with him. We have a population of people in my community, your communities, and Harriman that want to ride, that will, if we make it available, they will do it.
Well, this certainly is not something that we have on a five-year plan. I hope to be able to provide you with a good roadmap, like what I was describing. What are the things that you need for success? How can we help you? What are the appropriate station densities? How much funding will you need? All that. I hope to be able to give you that this year.
Now you're talking. Okay. I'm going to write that down. Give me a date for that. I know. That's what we need, Jennifer.
We already have a framework for that. Like I said, we're very serious. We're very excited about this. We know that communities are excited about this. We want to help you. We really do.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, Mayor, if I can,
sure.
Looking out at the daybreak, we've got a lot of residents there that are walking. I see them walking to transit, and I am certain they would take advantage of a biking system to get them, because that daybreak park, parking lot is completely full most times, because kids are going to the U, and they use it a lot. And so I see a lot of people in that are walking.
Well, we may not have every answer, but we will have a great roadmap for you very soon. You're not going to have to wait 5 years. That I can promise you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
There's a comment back here.
Oh.
If there's enough money, you can get things done a lot faster.
That's
the thing that we are waiting on for all of us.
So I think as the mayor says, we have a big corporate building project that's on the way, too.
And we're trying to move away from this long-term model. We're trying to move away from this model that we currently have, which is every year you try and raise enough sponsor dollars to cover your existing operations. But then one big sponsor pulls out, you shut the whole system down, and you're seeing this happen in places like...
And the other part of this for us, and this isn't your concern necessarily, but we have to come up with how does Mr. Smith ride his bike from home is stored at the transit stop until it's time for him to come back. That has nothing to do with green bikes.
It has to do with UTA, and we are working on it.
Okay. Jennifer, you made my day today.
So we are working on it.
Because it's not going to be a guy like me with all this gray hair. I'm not going to ride a bike in the snow.
No, we're working on providing really great...
But we have a lot of young people who will.
Let us come back in the second quarter. Let's make a commitment. We'll be back before the end of the second quarter.
That is wonderful.
And report again with this... a framework.
And we are doing a lot with bike lockers. We're testing some e-lockers, putting bike lockers in more locations all the time. Totally working on it.
I'm glad you put me in my place.
We have a lot of work to do.
So
you keep us on task.
A lot of work too. And I haven't been exposed to that. That's probably my fault. I really had no detail of this until this meeting, so I appreciate you being here.
We'll come back anytime.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there any other questions on this? If not, we're going to move on. We'll move on to Wayne for his report on Fast Act funding.
Thank you, Mayor. As most of you are aware, Congress and the President passed the Fixing America's Surface Transportation, or FAST Act, back in December. It provides $305 billion nationwide for all the federal transportation programs, and the key point is that it provides 5 years of consistent, predictable funding, which we haven't had for quite some time from the federal government. So this is good news, and it does provide, especially for some of the funds WFRC administers, some modest funding increases to keep pace with inflation. This just shows some of the programs that are continuing with the FAST Act, and a couple that are folded in, and one new freight program. I just want to briefly point out that even though the surface transportation program has been renamed, we don't see any material effects coming from that. And for the MPOs across the country, the allocation used to be 50-50 between the MPOs and local governments and the state. That increases to 55% by the end of FAST Act, or by 2020. And so we will see some increases, modest increases in funding. And also want to point out that with this consistent 5 years of funding from the federal government,
I want to go to that bottom bullet where WFRC is intending to program 2 years worth of TAP funds in this cycle so that we are able to program projects 2 years out instead of 1 year out. After this year, we'll go back to just programming 1 year's worth of funds, but by getting 2 years out, programming 2 years out, that'll match how quickly projects on the ground are getting from programming to construction. So, and that just points out a few programs. So, any questions?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Muriel, we will turn the time to you for a legislative update. And Andrew, do you want to be part of this too? Jump in wherever, whatever.
With your permission, only where needed, sir.
Yeah. We already covered your area, didn't we?
Well, perfect. Before I start, and I know we're short on time, so I'll be really brief. Many of you have attend our weekly WFRC legislative meetings up at the Capitol, or have heard me present even as recently as yesterday at the TAC meetings. So before I start, I wanted to announce briefly that we are pleased to announce our national member association, the National Association of Regional Councils, has selected Salt Lake City and our region to host the 50th anniversary of their annual conference. So we're really excited about it. Several hundred elected officials and staff from across the country that do what we do will be here in Salt Lake City. And again, in the region, we're encouraging them to stay, come a little bit early, stay a little bit later. The dates are, and we'll send out a save the date early next week, but Sunday, June 26th through Wednesday, June 29th. And that's the week before the 4th of July weekend, so we're really, again, promoting this as, you know, come early, stay late, and enjoy the region and the state. And it will also be done in conjunction with our Wasatch Choice Consortium and with the Active Transportation and Health Summit. And I'm looking at Jen because she's helping us with that as well. So it will be a number of events. We will be getting more information out to you as we have that available. But please mark that on your calendars that at least for the consortium on Wednesday, June 29th, we'll have the consortium, the Active Transportation and Health Summit, and hopefully some national partners that want to stick around for, you know, to see what we're doing here locally in Utah.
And we might add that Muriel and Andrew have worked very hard to encourage us to come for their 50th year celebration.
But are you going to send something out for us with that, if you would please?
Yes, absolutely, we will. So we will send a save the date, hopefully early next week, and then we'll follow up with additional information. And if you'd like, we could even do, as the date gets closer, a calendar appointment so that it gets on your calendar.
That'd be great.
So we're pretty excited. Well,
before you get into the boring stuff, I probably deserve a hand of applause. Good job.
Boring stuff. This is some cool stuff, TJ. again, though, I'll be brief because we're short on time and many of you have heard this already. As you'll recall, just for a little bit of context, last session in 2015, the state legislature passed and Governor Herbert signed into law HB 362, which provided historic comprehensive transportation funding. HB 362 had two main provisions, a reform and increase of the state gas tax, and then also a 0.25% local option sales tax for transportation that counties could put on the ballot and voters could approve. As you all know, 10 counties last fall put it on, or 17 counties put it on the ballot, 10 passed it, became known as Prop 1. And in Salt Lake and Utah County, it did not pass. In Weber, Davis, and Tooele counties, it did. Here in the WFRC region, Box Elder, it also did not pass. The reason I bring that up is that there are two bills I wanted to bring to your attention this session that attempted or will attempt to change the allocation identified in the local option. So if you go to page 3,
HB 183, sponsored by Representative Jack Draxler from Cache County. This bill would, for five rural counties, change the allocation in the local option to afford a little more flexibility when it comes to transit funding. So again, counties off the Wasatch Front, outside of the UTA service area, this would provide a little more flexibility where the 0.1 of the 0.25 currently authorized under HB 362 that goes to transit, essentially 25% of that 0.1 would still go to that local transit provider. You know, these are some smaller transit providers that provide some local bus service. The remaining 75% of that 0.1 would go to the county to then decide how that would be distributed. They could put more towards transit, or they could divide it evenly 50-50 with the cities in that county. Again, it only affects five counties outside of the WFRC area. The reason I bring it up is just so that it doesn't get confused with another piece of legislation that I also wanted to bring up with you. And that is right underneath HB 183, HB 215 sub 1. So as you'll recall, with Prop 1, there were conversations about, you know, did Prop 1 not pass in Salt Lake and Utah counties because of the transit component? I think, you know, if you look comprehensively at all the counties that had it on the ballot, there were, and bear with me here, there were counties that had transit that passed it, counties that had transit that did not pass it, as well as counties that did not have transit that did pass it, and counties that did not have transit that did not pass it. So really across the board, right? And HB 215, sponsored by Representative Brian Green from Utah County, would have changed the transit component in the local option to remove transit altogether. The position taken unofficially by those of the council that attend our weekly legislative meetings was to oppose this bill. I think, you know, it's really important to note that not only did the members, again, that attend our meetings oppose it, but the Transportation Coalition, in conjunction with the Utah Association of Counties, the Utah League of Cities and Towns, and as well as the Taxpayers Association and Air Quality Advocates, all opposed that bill, or at least supported keeping the compromise reached last session in place. That bill failed in committee 2 weeks ago. You know, we have heard that there may be a similar bill come up on the Senate side. We have not seen any official bills introduced to that effect, but we are watching it closely. And feel free, if you have any questions, to just ask them as we go. So that, those
know,
are the...
You know what the vote was in the committee?
It was 7-4 with one absent. And I would say, you know, don't take that vote as necessarily an indication of the 7 who voted against it or the 4 who voted for it as, you know, opposed or it. Okay. Some of that is some political calculations, I think, of the members. But yeah, no, it did fail. A couple of other bills we wanted to bring up were just underneath this on the same page, HB 257 and HB 296. HB 257, there is a companion bill in the Senate that is the exact same language, SB 80, sponsored by Senator Stuart Adams, and then this one is sponsored by Representative Lee Perry. Essentially what this would do is it would take funding from the current state sales tax dollars that are going to the Transportation Investment Fund for state highway capacity projects and redirect, under this particular version of the bill, approximately $35.5 million to a water account called the Water Infrastructure Restricted Account per year. And that would reduce the amount of funding going to transportation. It would help to capitalize a fund for major water infrastructure projects. I will note that the bill doesn't specifically call out what those projects would be for water. Now, I'm looking at Shane if he wants to add anything here as well. UDOT testified in committee a few weeks ago that under the bill as it's currently written, they would need to delay some projects that are in this right here, which is all actually in your packets. They would need to delay two projects that are currently programmed for funding, and those would be US 89 in Davis County, and then a portion of Mountain View Corridor from 4100 South to SR 201.
Now, we testified in committee that if $35 million was taken out of the program each year for the next 5 years, projects like Mountain View Corridor or the project in Davis County would be after you delayed. We didn't say that project would be delayed, that project would be. Something like this would have to be delayed.
Okay, so not necessarily specifically those two projects, but the types of projects. Okay, good. Okay. So again, under that scenario, another piece of legislation that also has implications for the TIF is HB 296, sponsor Representative Johnny Anderson. Now,
where is that?
Same page right below 257. So, and Ben mentioned this earlier, just backing up a little bit, the legislature last year asked the Utah Transportation Commission to program projects out, identify funding for projects beyond the traditional STIP period, and they did that through 2022, which is here in your packets. And so, as part of that, they were able to show that building in some contingency, they would be able to still continue to fund those major highway capacity projects. And the governor's budget proposal, it proposes taking $10 million in fiscal year 17 and incrementally $20 million the next year, $30 million the next, up to $50 million from TIF and redirecting that back to the general fund for other purposes. Representative Anderson's bill is the legislative version of the governor's proposal. So under this particular scenario, again, we would not see projects delayed, that UDOT has shown that those projects would still be able to be built with that contingency built in.
So that green box on that 11 by 17 sheet, whatever that color is, like that copy. Top box shows that that's the governor's proposal to take money away from the TIF and put it into some, well, in his proposal. So, with that kind of takedown, the projects in the program do not get affected. Everything stays on track. Anything above that would affect projects, and something would have to give. Either projects have to be delayed or canceled. So, the Representative Perry's and Stuart Adams' bill both take more than the $10, $20, $40 million, and therefore would have an impact. But they are right now talking about, both Representative Perry and Stuart, Senator Adams, neither one of them wanted to affect the program. They both realized that taking money away would have an impact on the program, so they're trying to figure out a way to get water to move to, get money to move to water without affecting the transportation program. So I don't think you're going to see $35 million a year from each of those, but you will see something that comes from it.
Yeah, when this was debated on the floor, Senate Bill 80, and there was a lot of pushback, as you're saying, about the concern about delaying projects. And so there seems to be a consensus. Let's try to figure out a way that we can be supportive of investing in water needs in the state, but not delaying projects that are already in the program, not hurting the important transportation infrastructure investments. So those discussions are ongoing, as you know.
So we anticipate, per what Andrew and Shane just mentioned, that there the bills as they currently stand, you know, there will likely or may likely be some changes to them. So one last bill that I would like to bring up is HB 318, and that is on page 6. This is the Point of the Mountain Development Commission Act. So this bill was considered in committee last week and passed out favorably. This would essentially create a commission at the Point of the Mountain to study essentially three things, including transportation and land use planning in the area, which WFRC and MAG, in conjunction with UTA and UDOT, would be doing anyway and are doing. And the second piece of this would be, you know, a study to look at the economic development potential of the area, financial implications of all the development happening. The third piece of this would be a more broad stakeholder engagement and outreach to bring those stakeholders to the table so that these types of decisions can be made collaboratively. So the original version of this bill called for a development of a development authority, and this updated version, sub one, kind of softens that a little bit, creates it as a commission so that, again, it's not looking to take, and I'm looking at Mayor Walker here because he may want to comment as well, it's not looking to take land use authority away from local communities, but look at, again, this broader area at Point of the Mountain and, you know, what can be done here. We're, some folks say that this is like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to look, again, at, you know, what's happening here and what the potential is. I would say the commission is a 12-member commission, again, as the legislation currently is drafted, and Mayor Walker, as the mayor of Draper, would be listed as a commission member. Do you have anything you'd like to add about this?
Well, Andrew and I both spoke at the committee hearing on this, and, you know, our main goal was to make sure that we get to take our wallets to the store and not report them stolen. Someone using our credit card, and so we made that clear as the legislation's been being drafted, and I think the spirit of it is to look at all of us having a stake in it, and certainly I know my fellow mayors, and no one's going to let them take our wallets out without screaming, but we wanted to make it clear, and so I think they're on board with coming up with a good plan, so I'm comfortable with it. I think it's going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Just to this point, just to make sure everybody's clear, the version of the bill that was passed out of committee does not affect local land use authority and does not affect local taxing authority. So I think it's important. I don't want to give anybody the impression that it does. It's very important to watch out to make sure that it doesn't, and it doesn't as it's written right now.
The issue really is with the prison site. Obviously, the state owns the property and they have land use authority, but what my worry is they try and incorporate something like MIDA, and they put their finger down in the map and draw a big circle around it that affects all you guys and say this is now part of the state's land use authority. So we have to watch that for sure.
We do, and then there's some other bills up there that have a whole different philosophy that concerns me with the revenue coming off of the prison site.
Yes.
That takes it away from local cities in the typical way of getting your half percent point of sale. And there's some real dangers, there's some great benefits from this, and I'm for, personally, in our city, we talked about it and so forth, we're for this bill coming out with the careful watching of it, but there's those other bills that don't seem to have legs, but they could. Harper's bill is one of them.
And that's Lincoln Fillmore.
Lincoln Fillmore from South Jordan. And I've talked to Lincoln about it personally, and I have some concerns with the camel's nose coming into the pen. It could not affect us directly with that bill now, but it has the potential, once you get the nose in there, of it affecting all different cities all along the line.
Yes, Mayor. The other concern that we've heard from some of you all as well is to make sure that during the visioning process that east-west connectivity is considered. It just kind of the east-west development, and then also making sure that we retain local land use authority as a, you know, concern.
So I'm just going to, I'll end on a happy note here. As a planner, I like the idea of this because it's the two MPOs at a county boundary willing to come together to think about these things jointly. And our rail line obviously crosses over that. So I think it's a positive thing in general.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Silicon Slopes don't get developed, you know, in a vacuum outside of the prison redevelopment site. So
I've had lots of conversations with the speaker about it myself, and he understands our concern about land use and tax increments. So, you know, I'm with you. I think that the spirit of it's good. I mean, certainly camel's nose needs a ring in it to make sure we can control it. But you guys.
Yeah, I'm actually not opposed to HB 318. It's the possibility and the probability that I'm afraid of.
Meaning the camel's nose.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Put a ring in that camel's nose.
Okay, well, you know, when you get legislature involved.
Just one last thing to mention, I know we're wrapping up here, is that WFRC has an appropriations request for $70,000 to help fund our operations, and it passed favorably out of the subcommittee, and we're moving on to hopefully getting it listed on the final list. So that's all I have.
Right, which is why I'm leaving too, because I'm going up to the Capitol for the Executive Appropriations Committee, where this is going to be talked about maybe, so bye.
Is there any other business anyone wants to bring up? If not, we're looking for a motion.
The move.
Sir, second?
Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope the roads are halfway decent for you. You drive safely.